another exciting, informative, educational episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I am Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Inquirer, your host, and special guest host today, back again. Back in the hot seat is our opinion and engagement editor, Kevin Aldridge. Welcome back.
Thanks, Burl. Good to be back.
It's good to have you, Kevin. So, this story just won't stop. The so-called video, the brawl, whatever you want to call it. And we've had some developments over the past week. You have also taken pen to paper, so to speak, and have written a very compelling opinion piece about it. But just to tee up the discussion today, Kevin, some recent developments. Charges continue to be filed. The so-called slapper, the white man in the video, who had not been charged, and that was a point of contention with many leaders in the black community, after seven of the charges were all black individuals, six of them charged with both rioting and felonious assault, a seventh individual charged with felonious assault. One of those individuals is now facing drug charges unrelated to the brawl. But last week we had the charges filed against what some say is an individual who provoked a lot of what happened, and that's a gentleman named Alex. We call him Alex T here, who was charged with misdemeanor disorderly conduct. So we have people on both sides of the debate, which we'll get into that in a second, not happy with that. But also, fresh off the headlines as we record this podcast, the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the union representing police officers in Cincinnati, we're recording this on a Tuesday. Monday night, issued a vote of no confidence for Mayor Aftab Perval, which is sort of unprecedented. So lots to sort out here. I want to also, though, give you a chance to talk a little bit about your take on this that you expressed in an op-ed piece that ran in print Sunday and late last week, because you've given this a lot of thought. You've talked to people on, you know, various people involved with this whole sordid affair. Where are we right now, Kevin? It seems like this story just won't go away.
Yeah, it won't go away, and I think part of the reason for that is we're doing a very poor job, I think, of like talking about it and talking about it with nuance and talking about it with truth. And that is what I was trying to get at the heart of my piece, is I'm sitting back thinking about this. And again, you know, in the role that I play here at the Inquirer, I get to hear a lot of different perspectives. I talk to a lot of different people. And I think one of the things that I kind of do better than most is I actually listen. And I think that's part of our challenge right now in Cincinnati, is there are a lot of people doing a lot of talking and not a whole people who are really doing a lot of active listening, or listening in earnestness. And so as I'm listening to what people are actually saying and how they're feeling, and I'm thinking about this along with my own thoughts, I'm like, man, this is not too hard to get our arms around it if we're willing to sort of put the politics and our biases aside and just sort of look at this thing sort of logically and with a bit of common sense, and recognize that, you know, several truths can exist at the same time, right? Like if you're somebody who's upset about Alex T or the slapper, and what he did and his role in it, and the fact that a gentleman uses racial slurs in a in an environment where you've got a bunch of black people standing around, I think it's okay to say that, you know, that's probably not too smart outside of, you know, right. not being anything that we should say is acceptable, you know, in today's society. That's absolutely 100% true to be able to say that. Now, does that mean that he deserved to be the victim of a mob beating? No. And we should be able to condemn that as well and say that what happened to him was disproportionate to whatever he did in that moment. And that too is not acceptable or representative of what we want in the city, and that we should all say that and agree that everybody should be held into account and held responsible for what they did, right? And I think that that's what is being missed among people who are critical of those who want Alex T, the white guy, the slapper, however you want to refer to him. I think people who are critical of those who want him to be held accountable, I think don't get that, that people aren't saying that his account means that you absolve those other folks of what they did. No, they absolutely need to be punished for their role in it. But if this gentleman played a key role in what unfolded and kept this thing kind of going, then there should be some accountability involved in that as well. Now, is it the same charges as what those other folks get? I don't know that that's the case. I don't know that that's what everybody is asking for.
And according to his defense attorney, there's video that has not been publicly released yet. That's a whole nother aspect to this.
I have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, like if you were going to be the crisis management communications specialist for the city of Cincinnati, wouldn't you have advised them to kind of break normal protocol with investigations? And because it's such a matter of public interest and public speculation,
yes,
to get out in front of it and just put it all out there.
Yeah, like, absolutely. I mean, with Connie Pillage, when the Ryan Hinton shooting case happened,
and we're talking about Hamilton County Prosecutor,
yes, Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillage, she came out and she did this whole, I mean, it was like PowerPoint video, I mean, the whole nine yards, and she went step by step, point by point, how things unfolded. Why did she do that? Because she recognized that this was a case that was huge within the county, within the city of Cincinnati, and she wanted to do her best to try to make sure that the public fully understood how they reached and arrived at the conclusion that they did to ultimately not bring charges against the officer.
And we have this almost as a tradition here in Cincinnati, going back to the 2001 shooting that sparked the riots of a unarmed black teen by a white Cincinnati police officer. Now, any police-involved shooting involving someone, a Cincinnati police officer, you typically see that, whether it's a Democratic prosecutor like Pillage or, you know, her predecessor, Joe Dieters, that the prosecutors, law enforcement, city leaders would stand up together and for the public's benefit to eliminate speculation and Monday morning quarterbacking and giving, you know, potentially giving people fuel to add to the fire, is putting it all out there.
Yes.
Even though the investigation is going on, even though, you know, everybody should have their day in court, that, you know, that's why we here fight for freedom of information. The public's right to know is super important. And in the Hinton shooting, you did see that blow by blow, frame by frame.
Absolutely.
Multiple police body cameras. Members of the media that request the body camera footage got it within days. That's not what has happened with this. I'm just going to call it the video, you know, because if you call it a brawl, some people say it was an assault. You know, if you call it an assault, other people say it was a bunch of misbehaving adults that, you know, closed down the bars and nothing good happens. You know, let's just call it the video. Right. This has been, you know, information has been given to the public in dribs and drabs.
Yes.
And I think that's part of why it just won't die.
Absolutely. And what people are doing is, and I've said this, you know, numerous times, that if the city had just released a narrative or the best information that they had about, hey, here's what we know about how this thing started, and then it went from this to this to this to this to this, right? This is where the racial slurs occurred in this altercation. This is where the slap happened, right? This is what initially set things off. Like that, I think even that simple timeline or chain of events would have helped a lot, because I agree with you. I think people are trying to determine what happened based on a video here, a video there that has been sort of leaked out here. And in the absence of good, factual, reliable information, people are filling in the gaps. They're giving their own interpretations based on what they saw.
And worse than that, there are people who don't let the truth get in the way of an agenda.
Yes.
And you've seen that play out immediately. You know, I think the FOP vote is an example of that, where they've had a long simmering, you know, since the AFTAB Pervall administration took place. And, you know, we, you know, during the campaign debate we had before he was elected, there were questions about, is he a defund the police person? And right. remarks he said earlier, does he stand on supporting police officers? It's almost like they were waiting for an opportunity to say, see, now we know AFTAB doesn't support us because of their view on how he handled the aftermath of the video. So, you know, if you are quick to divide among, you know, between racial lines, you can do that with the way this video unfolded.
Absolutely.
You know, we have the defense attorney for the white individual saying that prior to what we've seen on the video, he was, you know, harassed and told he doesn't belong here. And we haven't seen that video.
Right.
It might come out in court, you know, and if it does, that's going to change the dynamics of this situation.
Sure.
But if that doesn't exist, then you've got other dynamics in play. So I guess that's the part where I, as you know, a vested member of the community, not just because of my role at the Enquirer, but, you know, I live here, raising a family here. I was raised here. I think this, unfortunately, has brought out the worst in us rather than pull us together. Do you think I'm overreacting?
No, I don't think. I think it's par for the course, though, for kind of where we are as a country. I mean, we're a divided country right now, and I think that's why this video, and again, what I tried to get into in my piece, it taps into those things that are sort of baked into us because of our, you know, past history, our past racial history, our current political environment. You know, all of that stuff is mixed together in one big giant stew that sort of comes out. And like with everything else, the brawl has forced us into our tribes, whether that's your racial tribe, whether that's your political tribe. When what I've tried to appeal to Cincinnatians is that the one tribe that we're all a part of is that we live here in this city or live here in this area, and we all have a genuine love for it. And that's the thing that we have to right now put above our politics, put above our racial animus, and try to figure out how do we do what's best for Cincinnati? Because if we don't figure out a way to get a handle on this here locally, there are other people at much higher levels of government who would love to come in here and handle it for us. I mean, we see what the president is currently doing.
Not a hypothetical.
Yeah,
I mean, it started with Senator Bernie Moreno way out in front of knowing what really happened, saying that if Cincinnati doesn't, you know, clean up its act, he's going to work to withhold federal funding. That was a shocking statement from a senator elected by the people to represent them. And, you know, we had an editorial pointing that out, and also just to prove we are, you know, we call him as we see him, and it has nothing to do with partisan politics, praising Governor DeWine as being, you know, as he often tends to be in this current political age, one of the grown-ups in the room.
Right.
You know, the part about this for me that just has me shaking my head is we have challenges here, like any city does, with public safety. And there are some very specific challenges regarding youth violence, whether it is, you know, teenage people wielding firearms, breaking into cars, as happened this week. Mm-hmm. Too many of them have ended up shooting each other. We have, you know, issues like that that deserve our attention. Mm-hmm. What was captured on this viral video is absolutely not representative of any of those issues, right? And
right.
That's the one that has our attention, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to oversimplify things, but like truly, this was a you know, after the bars have closed mm-hmm. on a busy weekend downtown, example of grown-ups behaving badly.
Yes.
You know, whether you want to say that there are racial motivations or whether you want to say that, you know, that there should have been a better, a more prominent law enforcement presence that night or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. This, what happened, what we saw, ugly as it was,
right,
does not happen too often here. There are other, there, you know, but that's what we're focused on now. That's what's, you know, dominating. I counted, we have had close to 200
wow.
separate news stories and or letters to the editor, guest columns, related coverage mm-hmm. based on this video of what boils down to, you know, I think, and this is my opinion, a drunken brawl, right?
Yeah,
this is grown-ups that should know better.
Absolutely.
Right? And you see people in the video trying to calm things down,
mm-hmm.
trying to separate people who are getting scrappy with each other. So it's not all ugly. It's not like, you know,
right.
if you've not watched it and studied it, you could have an impression of it completely different than what happened. But still, not representative of all of what we probably should be talking about. That's what I think, you know, is the head scratcher with this one.
Yeah, I think what a couple of things I think elevated this. One, it came at a time when we were already talking about an unacceptable level of violence in downtown and OTR, right? So I think it's important to remember that the backdrop to the brawl is that there had already been conversations about crime being at an unacceptable level, right? I mean, I think the mayor and the police chief and others came out, you know, I think weeks before this, and they had a big press conference about the initiatives that they were going to do and the task force that was going to crack down. So I think it's important to remember that all of that conversation was already happening, and then this happened. And then this sort of became, because it got amplified nationally, you know, Elon Musk tweets it out and then other people catch on, Fox News gets it. And then the next thing you know, this what would normally be a small thing is raging out of control because it's been elevated on a national level. And I think it's elevated on a national level, I think, because of the severity of the incident. I mean, anytime you see six or seven people stomping on somebody, you can't downplay the
especially
look of that.
If it was all white people stomping on a white dude, we wouldn't care.
Yeah, the racial element.
Or reverse it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
The racial element absolutely elevated.
Yeah, if you're just watching, you know, the first video, the viral video, it doesn't look good. You know,
yeah.
it makes us uncomfortable. What, no matter whether you're black or white, it
right.
makes us uncomfortable.
And that's where to me you've got to think about sort of like the politics of how it went viral, how it got amplified, right? And a lot of people want to say like, well, this is a public safety issue. It doesn't have anything to do with race and politics. And I just think that anybody who holds that point of view is just ignoring a whole lot behind this. And quite frankly, I just think that that's just not a very honest way of looking at this situation, because you have to recognize to your point, these sorts of things happen around the city all the time. You can go on, you can Google right now Cincinnati fights and probably find 10 to 12 fights that look just like that, or maybe even some that are even worse, that might be white on white, black on black, you know, what have you, and they don't get nearly that kind of national press. I mean,
it's the world we live in now.
Yeah.
Why certain videos go viral and some don't, but when they do, it's usually because people are looking for red meat in
yes.
terms of justifying their political positions, mm-hmm. their worldviews. This became politicized immediately.
Yes.
In many ways, it reminded me to the confrontation that happened in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. With some CoveCath students.
Absolutely.
The Nicholas Sandman case, where there's a viral video of him squaring up against an African American, no, I'm sorry,
Native American.
And a Native American protester on the mall. And he happened to be wearing a MAGA hat,
mm-hmm.
right? So immediately,
yes.
his life changed.
Yes.
Like, we'll never be the same.
Yeah.
You know, lawsuits, national media attention from a kid that was really just going on a field trip and did not expect to be thrust into that situation. So, all right. Well, the story has not come close to being resolved.
Right.
Can you believe we still have, like, trials and hearings
and
pleadings.
Yeah, and an election.
And an election now.
Yeah,
this is the video is going to be with us for a while. So, Kevin, thanks for joining us here. We are going to switch now to our special guest segment of the podcast. I'm pretty excited because we have with us today Julie Isperding, who is the longtime director of the Thanksgiving Day Race, sponsored by Western and Southern, who after 25 years and a storied career as a runner herself, you know, representing the United States on the National Marathon team in 1984, she is turning over the reins of the race. And we're going to talk about that with someone who she's turning the race over to, and that's Jeff Birding, the CEO of FC Cincinnati. So let's bring on our special guests. It is special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. As promised, we have not one, but two special guests today. One is a five-timer, six-timer on the podcast. We've lost track, Jeff.
We have.
Jeff Birding, the co-CEO of FC Cincinnati. And, of course, the star of the show today, the true star, is Julie Isperding, the longtime director of the Thanksgiving Day Race, the now Western and Southern Thanksgiving Day Race, who, after 25 years...
Do you believe it?
I kind of believe it because I've run probably many of those races. I think the first race I ran, we were bused from here to Latonia.
That is true. It's funny you should say that because it was point to point. And one of the most memorable years was the first year. And that's when I decided to move the course directly to Cincinnati, to Paul Brown Stadium. I thought I could convince Mike Brown to finish on the 50-yard line. And that didn't work. But that's when we brought the race. So the start and finish was at the same place, which logistically made it so much easier for families,
sure.
first of all.
And runners.
And for runners. But the coordination, it was so much easier to get more people on that starting line and make more people fall in love with the race. And it was pure Cincinnati at that moment.
So 25 years as race director, overseeing growth and changes, and you have decided that you're going to step back a little bit, not away.
Who can step away from this, but step away from the day-to-day activities, like not worry about the Rumpke portalettes and the Secret Service and SWAT and the insurance and the bibs. Step away from that, but not step away from standing at that finish line and watching all the runners finish. I mean, the finish line is the best seat in the house in my mind, but never stepping away from how beautiful this event is for our city, how beautiful the new headquarters are at TQL Stadium, how beautiful the course is, like hopefully running it, hopefully being there for all the joy of it and missing out on maybe a lot of the little details.
You said hopefully running it, not like running it, like managing it, but actually putting on your running shoes and running it. When was the last time you ran the Thanksgiving?
Well, I was
Have you ever run it?
Yeah, I ran it. I started, it was my second race of my running career. I was 16 years old and it was my first 10K. And when I finished that race, I think that's when I fell in love with running. I was a collegiate tennis player, and I only ran to be a better tennis player. I remember my runs were 1 mile to Buskin Bakery, stop in, have a donut, run 1 mile home. I mean, that was my training. I ran as a bet. I ran the Thanksgiving Day race, 10K, and then I won it.
All right, wait a minute. We have had you on the podcast before. I've read so many interviews with you. And Jeff, we're going to get to you in a second because our listeners are probably wondering.
She's the much more interesting part.
Why the heck is Jeff Birding here? He's been on the podcast so many times and here he's back again. We're going to get into that for a second. But for those who don't know, you are an Olympic marathoner. You're in the Xavier Hall of Fame and you caught the running bug at the Thanksgiving Day race. That's what started the whole thing.
Yes, this is my story. That's the
best story ever. Well, that might be so Cincinnati. We're going to have to to do a special drop, Phil, like.
So Cincinnati.
So I've won this race over 10 times. So I kind of lost count because it didn't really matter because really this race to me is no matter where you go all over the world. And I've run all over the world. When you can come home in your hometown, and I'm in love with Cincinnati. So, and be here in Cincinnati and your parents can actually see you run and you can be with all your family and friends. That to me was when I fell in love with running. It wasn't really about exercise. It was more about just being part of something bigger than yourself and not being in a hurry to finish, although I did win it a lot. But and then after I retired from running, after many years of competing and injuries, of course, when I volunteered for the race and eventually was gifted the race to become the steward of the race. And that's kind of like the story of how it began and how lucky I was. I always say, people always ask me about how great the Olympics were, but my real Olympic moments were in my career. Being part of something much bigger than the Olympics. This race to me, 25 years and thousands of stories about the race is way more important to me.
All right. We're going to come back to some of that. So you decide after all of this, 25 years as, you know, just being so involved in the race, being the race director, that you're going to step down and you need someone to kind of take it over, right? Kind of who do you transition it to? And that's where enter stage left becomes FC Cincinnati and Jeff Birding. So Jeff, are you the race director now?
No. We are proud to serve as a steward of the race just to keep it this treasured Cincinnati tradition where family and friends come together on Thanksgiving morning to spend time together in a healthy way before they go home and eat a lot of food. Julie is, I say she's Cincinnati's favorite daughter. And she came to me and a couple years ago and said, can we move the race to TQL Stadium? And her vision was to have the runners be able to come inside the stadium and be on the field and be on the big video board and just a neat way to celebrate the progress that's happening in the West End and the vitality around. And I think, you know, she can say it, but I'm a homer for Cincinnati. I've run the race. I've run a bunch of Flying Pig marathons and not as fast as Julie, maybe twice as long it takes me as her. But at the end of the day, I'd run this race and I said, listen, I don't know what the future will hold, but I'll make sure that the future keeps this race as an important tradition in Cincinnati.
So 2 years ago was the first time it started and finished at TQL. it has been all over the place. I mentioned earlier that it used to start in Lentonia. It used to cross the river into Kentucky and come back. Because of TQL's involvement, the course starts and finishes at the soccer stadium, goes through over the Rhine. What was the feedback as far as race participants moving it to TQL?
I probably got the most emails after the race, before the race. That was one of the best decisions we made. And the reason is, if you look at the course, we pass all the stadiums. Music Hall. It's all in Cincinnati now, Beryl. It used to go into Northern Kentucky, so it's pure Cincinnati. So you have the mayor on stage, you know, talking about how great it is to bring everything great about Cincinnati in one course. We also added the Chick-fil-A 5K that year. And we've always had the Pro-Am-Pac Kids Run. So we expanded all the family parts of it and made the topography better. And then actually got to be part of this whole vision on the west side of Cincinnati, too. So I think it brought everything together that's great about Cincinnati.
And I would say, with a growth mindset, we learned things the first year. So where the end line was right outside the stadium moved a little bit to allow for better egress. So think about all those runners, 10, 15,000 runners finishing the race. You need to move them out of that space more quickly. So we did some things between year one and year two. We're doing some additional things this year for year three, just to make it a better experience for everyone. But at the end of the day, we're proud to bring people into our stadium who, you know, may not be soccer fans. They may not have ever been to our stadium. But we're trying to show that FC Cincinnati is an important community institution that loves the city and all the things that are great about this city. And this is some way for us to do something in a good way for people who love this race.
So, Julie, you mentioned you're not worrying about porta potties, you're not worrying about permits and all those things, packet pickups. And Jeff, you're not the race director. So who's in charge? Who's sweating the details right now?
So we have had for, I want to say, close to our maybe 7 years since we've been in Major League Soccer, we've had an FCC 3, a 3 mile race. We just did it a couple weekends ago, tied into our alumni weekend. Natalie Anderson on our staff, who used to be the executive director of the Marvin Lewis Community Fund. And when Marvin left and the Marvin Lewis Community Fund was going to go defunct because the Bengals didn't want it, we brought Natalie and a lot of the programs into FC Cincinnati. So she has helped coordinate the FCC 3, and she's sort of our point person right now. We do the FCC 3 with Pigworks, and I'm helping them on their capital campaign. I'm on one of their committees.
And for those who don't know what Pigworks is, that is the umbrella organization over the Flying Pig Marathon and those related events.
That is correct. And so Doug Olberding is the new executive director or CEO of Pigworks. And we are working with Doug and his team, John Casella, to all the logistics that Julie used to do about, you know, the start line, the finish line, the chips, the bibs, the fencing, the road closures, the permits with the city, the portalettes. All those things are
Those are critical as a runner in these events.
Yeah, you can't race without them.
You can't, right. And you can never have too many.
Right. The volunteers,
the food at the finish line, all the good stuff, the bags, the bibs,
the goodie bags,
packet pickup.
Yes,
SWAT.
A good one too is the police. So it's, and I was never just the person, but there are so many other people involved behind the scenes too, some of which were already at FC Cincinnati. So I've been working with them.
How big is your committee, your Thanksgiving Day Race Committee?
There's about 10 of us.
Okay.
Some volunteers, some not. But it just depends. And then, Beryl, I do want to commend the Cincinnati Police because people don't realize how much they do prior to the race. Meetings with them, coordinating, they help us with the course. They work with all the city services to be sure that traffic and engineering and all the permits that we have are in order. And then they coordinate a lot of like start-finish area. And they work with SWAT and they work with Secret Service. So, you know, you look at different parts of this race and each part of it is like our timing company. You know, that's another committee. So a lot of moving parts, especially on race day.
So who's in charge? Natalie? I'm just curious. Like, there's got to be someone where the buck stops.
Well, right now, Natalie on our staff, who's been working with Julie, and to be clear, Julie's been working all year long since last Thanksgiving for this race, which is 3 months from tomorrow. So
it's time to sign up, everybody.
It is.
Hey, yeah, including you. Yeah,
ThanksgivingDayRace.com.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jeff, do you see more involvement with Pigworks long term as far as?
Yes. Okay. I spoke yesterday with Doug Olberding at Pigworks, and the point would be is Julie's made her decision that the race is in great shape for this year. The website is active. The sponsors are signed up. And she's ready to move and she's earned it. So we have said we will keep it going. And we are currently talking with Pigworks literally yesterday on how we partner with them to keep the Thanksgiving Day race moving forward in a great way. And because FC Cincinnati already has experience working with Pigworks with FCC3, this isn't something new or different. It's just another race that we are going to, you know, figure out what the future looks like to keep it going. It's 116
years old, and I want 25 years of more stuff to do. So this kind of frees up my schedule too. I do a lot of keynote speaking, and I can now speak and travel more, especially fourth quarter. And then I'm a Pilates teacher, so I have this huge Pilates practice with a lot of collegiate athletes, professional athletes, and high school girls, and a lot of CEOs. And so that's really a lot of work too I've been doing. And then I'm doing a lot with WLW, with some radio. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of frees up my life more to do all the other things I want to do before I'm dead.
Okay.
Basically.
Well, hopefully you have a lot of time, Julie.
Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah. All right. Let's get back to you, the race. And like I said, I've lost track of how many I've run. I was at the first TQL1, and that was fun. I hope to run it this year. Talk about the race, as you were mentioning earlier, you called it your Olympics, just the magic of the whole event, participating, spectating, all of that. What's your tip for someone who's thinking about for the first time running a race and starting with the Thanksgiving Day race?
Begin, get on that starting line. I think the confusion for a lot of people is they just don't know how good they are and how little it takes to go out for a walk and get started on that, just, you know, walking. And that's what, when we added the Chick-fil-A 5K and that, so grab a friend, sign up, and then just start walking. It's amazing what a goal out there will do for you. It will inspire you, and so will all the other people that you either train with or tell you're going to run the race or make them sign up. So that alone, the magic of a goal and the magic of knowing that you are much better than you think you are, that'll take you places in my mind. And this race is so beautiful. I mean, you can just look at the pictures and look and know. In fact,
we have lots of pictures at Cincinnati.com. Galleries,
yes,
and galleries.
Galleries. And
we'll have to link those out.
It was so funny. Even like the 100th, I look back at some of the most memorable races. Of course, the 100th was perhaps the most memorable in my life, and I think in the life of Cincinnati. That was the year when we had over 17,000 people at the starting line. People who'd never run before, obviously. And that's what made this race like a national treasure as well. We were the largest turkey trot that year. And we
also... It's one of the oldest road races in just in general,
like,
right?
Third or fourth in the country, that alone.
Jeff, you were...
Well, I was just going to say it starts 1 mile at a time. Like, just the first mile. Like, just go walk a mile. I mean, my wife and daughter walked it last year, did the 5K. They had a great time just laughing and talking, and it was beautiful fall, you know, crisp morning.
Yeah.
And it just, and then you feel so much better the rest of the day. And so when you're watching football or watching
totally
a movie,
it totally legitimizes the calorie overload you're going to have later in the
but
day.
But you just when you feel so good. And it, you know, there's 3 months. And, you know, I've been blessed to run 9 marathons now. And I always tell everyone, they're like, how do you do it? I said, it starts with the first mile. Like, get out. And literally, I will, in my training, I will walk 1 mile is how I start. And then I go to 2 miles. And then I, you know, event a couple weekends later, we'll get to 4 miles. So to Julie's point, everyone thinks of like, oh, it's this big race. And it's really not a race. It's just an opportunity to get out there with family and friends Thanksgiving morning and just go for a beautiful walk together. And you do the 5K. It's 3.2. It goes so fast. No one's in a hurry. It is about that treasured time with family and friends on Thanksgiving morning before you have the big meal.
Yeah.
I love the community spirit on display. You know, families not just running together, but coordinating their race day outfits together, you know, whether they're in pilgrim outfits or turkey feathers or God knows what else we've seen
people
on the course.
People are just having fun.
Yeah.
And then the pictures that they send out.
You kind of forget you're exercising. And I always tell people, don't be in a hurry to finish this one because these memories will last forever because it was something you did with your family and friends. And it's like anything on a holiday. We call it a moving celebration. It's like, why not enjoy every moment instead of thinking about, oh, this is going to be hard or whatever. And those are the stories. We always say there's going to be 17,000 different stories on that course, whether you're doing it for charity or doing it because your dad said you're going to do it, or you wanted to do it because you were proving something about your health and wellness. It has everything to it, and you can capture any of those. Just stand on the finish line, and you see it unfold. I was also thinking about one of the stories of the race many years ago. A man actually had a heart attack on the race course, and a 16-year-old who was running behind him stopped his race, ran, found the ambulance, which was right on the corner. They saved his life. And brought him back to life on the way to Christ Hospital. When I went to visit the family that night at Christ, the wife hugged me and said, this race saved my husband's life because he had to have a quadruple bypass and could have had a heart attack in his kitchen.
Sure.
And wouldn't
or in
have
his
been
sleep
saved.
Or behind the wheel.
But he was saved because of the race because we had the medics there. But I only bring this up because it's just another story out there from 25 years of doing the race. And just think of all the other stories. We, you know, when we, the first year was the first race day of Chip Timing. And the race grew from 2,000 to 10,000 within 2 years. So, you know, stories like that really bring the event alive.
How many are you expecting this year? What's your target?
15,000.
All right.
Mm-hmm. It has the infrastructure now to do it. The course can accommodate it. It's, you know, we have like 4 lanes the city has given us. It's much bigger.
It seems like you guys flattened it out just a little bit, like got rid of some of the...
Oh, because the bridges are gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just...
If you've not run over a bridge...
No one knows.
You just
we
don't
joke
know
about
how
it.
Steep those damn things are. Yes. Yeah, until you do that.
You got to have some adventure
well,
in the race.
There is hill. It's downhill because you come down Eggleston all the way into the Riverfront Park and then behind the arena, behind the Reds ballpark, behind the Bengals, all along the river. And then you sort of come up through Lynn Street and Queensgate
right.
and back to the West End. So, yes, it's very flat and –
Have you ever, speaking of the course itself, have you ever stood on the starting line and just stood there and and we sing the national anthem?
Oh, yeah.
And it's a moment where the world just is quiet and you stand there. That is my biggest moment. Like every year I cry at that moment when there's 15,000 people standing there and the national anthem is being sung and it's all quiet. And those are those moments in Cincinnati history itself where you just stand there in awe. Those are the things that are hard to walk away from, those moments, or the moments when you see people in their finish line pose finishing the race, and or you see a policeman smiling and cheering for the runners. Those are those special moments.
So you mentioned earlier that 25 years ago, you were gifted the race. You became the steward of the race. Did you ever think that would happen?
Not at all. I got back from the Olympics and I worked at Channel 9 News as a reporter. And I was just doing normal things. But as a volunteer, I volunteered for so many years. The race director then, Don Conley. And Bob Ronker from the Running Spot. Mm-hmm. Those two were pretty much the stewards of it and said, please.
Isn't it sad we don't have the Running Spot in town anymore?
Think about that. I was thinking about
I still have a Running Spot t-shirt that I purged t-shirts recently, and I was ruthless, like just pitching, why do I still have this t-shirt? I picked up one of my Running Spot t-shirts and I folded it up and I put it back. I couldn't part with it.
And what a wonderful time to give tribute to Bob Ronker, who really was our pioneer for bringing running to Cincinnati. I want to thank him for that too. We would put between 10,000 and 17,000 people through that store in 5 days. And it was an institution. And that was another thing that was just so wonderful about the race. It was really brought kind of the roots of it. It's always been sort of a hometown tradition, you know, nothing fancy.
So you're back from the Olympics. You said normal things. I got back from the Olympics and I'm working at Channel 9 as a reporter. Just normal things. and you became steward of the race. Did you know you were in for a 25-year journey? Did you think you would be passing it on?
Oh, I wanted to quit after year one. Are you kidding? It was so hard. I was talking to some people and talking about I failed in many ways. And I guess we all do. I made so many mistakes. But we learned from it and grew. And you always, every year you grow from this race. There's always something you think, oh, I could have done that better or something. The first race was super, super hard. And I thought, I'm done. I'm out. But with, you know, after you talk to the police and Mr. Barrett at Western and Southern and all the corporate sponsors, you're like, wait, this is a Cincinnati event. It's okay. You know, we'll all grow together.
Is it hard now? So from that start and then watching it grow, pouring your life into it for 25 years, was it a hard decision to step back and turn it over to the next steward?
Bittersweet.
Yeah.
I would say, but.
Or are you like, I'm done?
No. Oh, gosh. No. I mean, like Jeff was talking about, I've known Jeff for 25 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, we worked together on community projects for so long. I met with him 2.5 years ago and said, here's the vision. What do you think? And we've been working together for 2.5 years. And so it's sort of a natural thing to think, well, it's time. And also, I want to do other things. Like,
that's
all
fair.
The other, like, I'm working with the Cincinnati Art Museum on community
projects. I think the community can yeah. accommodate that. They should. You've earned it.
There's just so much more that I want to do now. And now I have the space. I wanted to make space in my life for other things. And I have Jeff's support. So
when she told me, I mean, I'm going to be honest. You said you've run the race. And when we're done running the race, eventually we make our way home, we shower, and we have Thanksgiving meal with our family. She goes home and sits behind her computer answering emails, and people maybe had something happen they want her to know about, or, you know, they give some feedback. she's dealing with that all day. She's mm-hmm. like, I've never really had Thanksgiving with my family in 25 years since I took over the race, because I lived that race day all Thanksgiving
well,
day.
Well, most of the participants.
And I felt so bad for her.
Even the walkers, by noon, they're out. You know, yeah. like you're probably there hours afterwards, right?
We are. I remember like many years just picking up that last banana peel on 2nd
Street. I wonder
Street.
Who picked up all the bananas.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's the police and I would be standing with many. And I've been through a lot over the 25 years, a lot of the police I've been working
with.
All
right, let's just stop here and do a PSA on behalf of the Thanksgiving Day race. All you runners, throw your banana peels in the garbage can. Come on now.
Yes.
Right? This is our town. You don't like throw banana peels on the floor of your house. Why would you? Anyway.
It's a labor
of
love,
out of the way,
though.
I understand.
You really, it is. Right, it's
so,
part of it.
So, but you're not completely disappearing. You're going to stay on.
Yeah. You might see me at that starting line.
All right. I'm anticipating
yes.
we will.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the brass tacks before we let you guys go back to whatever you were doing today. The race is Thanksgiving Day. That's
yes.
the easy one. If you want to sign up and register, you go to
ThanksgivingDayRace.com.
All right.
And it's live. People were signing up. Yesterday,
it's 3 months away. So really, I mean,
it is the
perfect
time.
Make
that commitment.
Yeah.
Although, as someone who used to live out of town and coming in to visit family at the last minute on Thanksgiving, and then you know you're there the day before, and you're like, okay, that's enough. I got to get out of the house. I'm running. Go run the Thanksgiving days. You can actually walk up and register. You have been. Can you do that this year again?
Yes.
Yes.
It's, yeah.
Yes.
I think that's important for Thanksgiving
so
Day races.
The race doesn't begin till 9 a.m. So, I mean, it's not like the Flying Pig at 6:30.
Right.
So you can come down in the morning, register and get your packet pickup at TQL Stadium in our First Financial Club. There on the east side of the stadium, there's plenty of parking. You know, thinking about the parking for our games in the west garage, the east garage, etc.
Is the tap room going to be open for a packet pickup day?
The speakeasy,
yeah,
or the Sam Adams tap room.
The tap room.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
All right,
people
so
have a
you
post-race
can make
beer.
An event. Just you can make an event out of just picking up your race packet.
Yes. So, yes, I think the 9 o'clock part is a great thing.
It's key. Yeah.
You know, people are going out the night before, family traveling in. You don't want to be up at 6 a.m. So 9 a.m.
You know, I think I've shared this before. I've run other races and I've tried to like be very intentional about what I'm eating the week leading up to the race. Okay. Most of the Thanksgiving Day races, that's not the case, because especially when you're out of town, you come back in, you want to hang out with friends, you know, there's usually beer involved and everything like that. I PR'd my 10K PR is a Thanksgiving Day race the night or the morning after a night of partying that really I shouldn't have PR'd. I should have just stayed home. But I think
dragged
that carbo, I mean, beer is a carb, right? I
yes.
think that carbo loading.
Yes.
So that's just my way of saying that. This is a fun race. This isn't a day to go out and blow away your PR.
That's
at least
really,
that's the
I
way
think,
I view it.
And that's how I always wanted to walk away from the race, is knowing that it really brought a lot of joy to the city, a lot of joy to each runner. And of course, a big thank you to people like John Barrett at Western and Southern and you guys and iHeartMedia, all the people, and especially FC Cincinnati and TQL Stadium. Like, that's like the point of all this, is to walk away and know everyone had a good time.
Well, I think that's where we should end it, right there. I can't think of a better. I can think can't
well,
think of a better
I've,
close.
I've had 25 years of a great time. It's obviously the Olympics after the Olympics for me. So lucky me, I'm the one who actually won.
Well, on behalf of us here at the Enquirer, we want to congratulate you and thank you for your stewardship of such a community institution. Jeff, don't screw this up.
That's
our admonition to you.
That's the plan. And, you know, I'd encourage all the people listening. This is a chance to create new memories and new traditions in your family in a way that gets us active. And being active is a key to a healthier life. So start your new tradition and join us on Thanksgiving morning at TQL Stadium.
All right. Julie Ipserding, Jeff Birding, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Burl.
Thanks.
All right. So we want to thank once again Julia Spritting, Jeff Birding. I'm psyched now to run the race. We haven't nailed down our Thanksgiving plans yet. Sometimes we travel to visit family. Even though this is just my life, Kevin. When I lived outside of Cincinnati, I would travel back to Cincinnati for Thanksgiving and end up running the race. And now that I'm back in Cincinnati, I've been every other year leaving town for Thanksgiving. I just don't know how, you know, these things happen. But anyway, if I'm in town, I'm going to run this race. Are you? And well, I should ask, Kevin, have you run an organized race?
So
have you laced up your running shoes and put on a runner's bib and taken to the streets?
Yeah, so it's probably been about 6 years since I participated in any kind of race or walk. My cousin actually had a charity fundraising 5K walk run color race, and so as you went around, you know, the track, you had various people there who would douse you in like this powdered dye.
I've not done that, but I've seen pictures of it.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I have some questions.
Okay.
Like, do you breathe that in? Is it like, it looks like it's floating in the air, like that might be a degree of difficulty with that race that others don't have.
Yeah, so I think my wife and I, we were smart enough to close our eyes and hold our breath every time we came up on like one of the splash stations. So I wouldn't know about breathe. If I did breathe it in, it wasn't noticeable because we did that when we went through there. But it was a blast. You know, I'm not a runner by nature. Even though I ran track in high school, it was mostly sprints. So I'm not a really big long distance person.
And you said it was a 5K?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not really that long of a distance.
Well, it's long if you don't do it.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
So yeah, that's about as close as I've gotten recently to doing one of these
things. So were you like absolutely covered with pigment?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, by the end of it, our clothes were, and they encourage
and
you when
this?
You, it was at, it was a Smith Park in Middletown.
Oh,
where
okay.
I'm from.
Go yeah. Middletown.
Yeah,
with
Middletown.
Your,
yeah.
With your...
And so they encourage you to kind of wear clothes that you don't, you know,
that
you don't
never
wear your,
will wear
yeah,
again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Unless, you're doing another one of those things. But we actually kept our shoes and whatnot for just sort of posterity's sake, I think, for a while, just to say that we did it. I think we probably pitched it a couple years ago eventually, but we kept it for a little while, you know, some of those clothes as a keepsake.
I guess so. I've always been fascinated when I've seen pictures of, I've never run in a, I don't even know what they're called, color bomb race or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, it was like color rush, I think. I can't remember what okay. he called it. But
all
yeah.
right. Well, I mean, Kevin, that... I should put that on my bucket list, man.
Definitely
you know.
Should do it. We had a blast. We had a blast. For people who aren't runners, it was a good time. And it was for charity, so it was for a good cause.
Well, that makes it all the better.
Yeah.
All right. Kevin, should we wrap this up?
Yes.
All right. I want to thank our listeners for listening to That's So Cincinnati, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
The good and the bad, right?
That's right.
All right. Finally, if you appreciate the content you hear today and you want more of it, please consider a subscription to Cincinnati.com and The Enquirer. We have a special going on right now for new subscribers. All you need to do is go to Cincinnati.com and in the upper right-hand corner, click on that subscribe button.
Thanks again. See you next week.